Parshas Bo. If you recall, last week we did Va'era. So I said, normally our policy is that if we realize that we skipped an Aliyah in a previous year, that we may sometimes double up. Last week, we decided it was too much because we realized calendar being when Yom Kippur break usually is, we apparently never done Va'era before. So we'd mean doing the first six Aliyahs, which is not the most efficient breakdown that one could have. So we just gave up and just did Shishi. In this case, in Parshas Bo, I see it's been spotty also, I guess also because of vacation issues, but not as much so. There have been, but not it's not a zero. So apparently we had missed a few Aliyahs, but we did do Revi. So I guess a reasonable idea is to do Chamishi and Shishi together now to try to catch up. But also we have a very short slot here. So let's go as quickly as we can through some of these ideas in the very significant Aliyahs in Chamishi and Shishi, which have some very core topics that are relevant to Pesach, some very familiar ideas. We'll just try to very quickly say a little bit about them. So here, in anticipation of Makos Bechoros, the Pasuk says, this is in Pasuk Chav Aleph, this is Perek Yibayz. So the Pasuk says, Vayikra Moshe l'chol zikne Yisrael, v'yomra lehem, mishchu k'chu lachem, tzol l'mishpachoseichem, v'shachatu ha-pasach. That you should, calls these kenim, and he says, draw out and take a lamb, and each for your families, and kill this Pesach. So, first of all, the words l'chol zikne Yisrael, Mechilta notes that this is just to show us, we should always show covenant to the Zekanim, because, as the Tanazatar Tumim explains, presumably he wasn't only talking to the Zekanim, so therefore the reference to Zekanim is just an expression of covenant. And the idea of Mishchu Khu, the Rishalmi in Maseches Kedushin, writes, this is just a important marmakom while we're talking about Kinyonim, that this shows that a Behemoth Daka is nicknamed with Mashicha. And that gets into a whole discussion because the question of kinyanim in general, what is the ikar kinyan min haTorah? So according to the machlokas that appears in the Bavli, that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, according to Rabbi Yochanan, mo'os konos dvar Torah, the main kinyan min haTorah is with the payment of money, and according to Reish Lakish, it's mishicha. But the question is whether that girsa is correct, because in Yerushalmi and Shvias it switched around. That Rabbi Yochanan says Mashicha and Reish Lakish says Moz. So here it sounds like it's saying Mashicha and Stam Yerushalmi is Rabbi Yochanan. So it sounds like maybe Rabbi Yochanan's position is really Mashicha. So just if you're holding and trying to figure out some of the Kinyanim issues, you just be aware of that whole discussion. But this idea of Mashukhu, so this is interesting. The language really just seems to be referring to the animal, that you should take the animal and pull it out and take it, but it seems like an extra word, and many assume that there is some symbolic significance here. So Mechilta quotes Rabbi Yossi Aglili that this means we should withdraw from Avodah Zarah. And the Torah Tumim has a comment that this, he thinks, is support to the Rambam's position. The Rambam's often quoted position of the Maariv Uchim that Korbanos is there to, the whole theme of Karbanos is there to help conquer Avodah Zarah. As opposed to the Ramban who strongly disagreed with the Rambam, the Ramban says Karbanos have an inherent theme in them, and that's why we do them. The Rambam has this idea, which is often quoted, maybe a little bit misquoted, to say that Karbanos aren't necessarily inherently significant, or maybe not only inherently significant, but are there to counter Avodah Zarah somehow. So how do they counter Avodah Zarah? So then there's two versions of that. Either because in the old day of Avodah Zarah, they're used to sacrificing things, so we had to have sacrificing of things also in order to kind of transition from one to the other. Or, more specifically, that the items that we are sacrificing, especially in this case, were the objects of Avodah Zarah. So therefore, he suggests that this pasuk kind of supports that idea together with Mechilta. The idea is, okay, here is this lamb, this is an object of idolatry, take it away from there and subvert it and make it into an object of Avodas Hashem. He thinks that, he notes that it's a machlokas, that everyone agrees with the Rambam, but he thinks that the Rambam's position has some support to it, and this is an additional possible support to it. Shem Shnefal Hirsch has a comment here which is in line with that also, and his language is withdraw the animal from all past and potential designations. And he writes that there's a two-step here process of sanctification and designation. So that's why, again, the pasuk is identifying these two things. The language of v'shachatu ha-pasach. So the Gemara understands, Chazal have a focus that Pesach has to be l'shma. If you learn the Masech Zvachim, the first Mishnah in Zvachim tells us that there's kind of a ladder in terms of how l'shma affects Karbanos. That when it comes to Karbanos in general, a Karban that shechted shalo l'shma is kasher. But don't get too excited, because it's kasher v'lo l'bay v'shem chobah. So apparently it's kasher, but it doesn't totally do what it needs to do, which is a whole discussion in the beginning of Zvachim, what that means. But Pesach is more than that. Pesach mamish has to be l'shma, and it's no good if it's not. And that's one of the possible sources. Chazal focus on a couple of languages to get that idea. So here the next pasuk continues. Pasuch of Beis, ulokachtem agudas ezo, utvaltem bedam asher basaf, vigatem lamashkof el shtei hamezuzos min hadam asher basaf, v'atem lo seitzu ish mipesach beisu ad boker. So you should take the blood together with agudas ezov that you dip in it, that's in this basin, and then you put it on the wall. You put it on the top, you put it on the two mezuzos, you put the blood on those areas, and you shouldn't leave your house all night. So why shouldn't you leave your house all night? So first of all, in terms of this general pasuk, before getting to that, Rosham Shafal Hirsch has a comment here also that he thinks that this pasuk is an example of Torah Shebaal Peh. Because earlier in Pasuk Zayin, so the Torah records this instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But here you get a lot more details. So apparently God said more details. That was Shebaal Peh. And what was actually written down was less. So Torah Shebichsav is on one degree of detail, and Torah Shebaal Peh is more. And here we're learning more details that were apparently given Shebaal Peh. So this idea of not leaving your house, so Rav Schechter has in one of his farms, I think in Nefesh HaRav, that Rav Soloveitchik had a drasha about this, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was afraid that the Jews would have kind of a rebellious slave mentality, that as soon as they were given a little freedom, that maybe they would just run riot on their enslavers, and they would come and slaughter everyone, and there would be this mass violence. So therefore, he ordered them to stay inside, which is an interesting perspective. Hi.
So, why didn't it happen when they got out, after this time that Hashem said you couldn't go out?
But when they actually left, and they were in the process of leaving, I think the concern was now when this havoc was going on, and they're basically not actually under their...
No, but just like, if you're saying that the idea is it's a slave mentality, then the slave mentality shouldn't change, that once you get out of the house, you see your oppressors, and you say, okay, I'm going to take my revenge now.
I hear. I think Bilo's point was that once they were actually in the process of leaving, they're going to be more interested in leaving. But during this chaotic night when there's this suffering going on.
It's like, what's it called? Last night before camp, like, we have to make sure you don't do raids.
Okay, and it's gone to an interesting camp, but if that's what your experience was like, then something along those lines.
I didn't take part.
No, I'm sure. You put a sign on your bunk saying, we'll say it's loose. So you're mocked. But the Gemara has a different perspective. In Bava Kamma, maybe it's also relevant to your camp experience, but it says, Kevin, Shemitan, Rishos, Lamashkas, Lahashkas, that once the Malach HaMavis is out there, it doesn't distinguish. That's a concept that we'll come to a little bit more in the beginning of Shishi. So just to continue here. So and the pasuk says, "Va'avar Hashem limgof as Mitzrayim v'ras damal amashkof v'yashkei mezuzos v'pasach Hashem al pesach v'li'itin amashkos l'avol b'teichem limgof." Like the Gemara said, here's the pasuk saying that God is going to pass over. Sound familiar? Right? He's going to pass over to. He's going to pass through to destroy to strike the Mitzrim, and he'll see the blood. And he will pass over, and that will prevent the destroyer from addressing the Jews as well. And you shall observe this for you and for your sons forever. It's this idea of Shmartem. So here, Shem Shem follows the comment also that you see it switches from a plural language to a singular language, Shmartem to Lacha. And he has a little drasha there where he says that there's a crucial unity of both parts, that the mitzvos have to be observed both in public life and in private life. And even though there's a svara one might have that either one or the other is enough, it's enough to have Torah mitzvahs only in your private life, but your public life is a whole different sphere. Or you could see someone also saying, fakert, that okay, what I do in public is important, but in private I can have whatever behaviors I have. So the pasuk here switches from both one to the other in the context of saying that this should be the permanent chok, this should be the permanent behavior in order to make that point. So now we're getting up to some very familiar psukim. Avahaya kisavo ala aretz, asher yiten Hashem lachem kasher diber, ushmartem savod hazo, so you will keep this as you come into the land. Now this is going to sound very, very familiar for any of you who might be Jewish and Passover observant and familiar with the Haggadah. V'hayok yomru aleichem b'neichem maha avod hazos lachem. So this is really the first of the references to the four banim, which would later become archetypes in the Haggadah. And one of them is going to say, maha avod hazos lachem. V'yamartem, and you shall say, Zevach Pesachu LaHashem Aser Pesach Abatei V'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim B'Nogfo As Mitzrayim V'yas Bateinu V'Tzil V'yikor Om V'yishtachavu. So you're going to say that this is the Korban Pesach. This represents the fact that God passed over the houses of the Jews in Egypt, and He struck the Mitzrayim and He saved their houses, and people bowed. So of course this is what ends up being the evil one. You can hear the cackling in the background and the evil gestures. And there's always a discussion, certainly there's no end of answers in the Haggadah as to what exactly it is that is the conversation here. Just to mention, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs spoke here a few weeks ago at MTA, and he made reference to this. And so I looked in his book of his drushos, where he does have a whole essay about this. I think he said different things. I think what he said in the speech here is not in the book, but just to give a quick survey. So he notes that the Meshach Chachma, you know, one could ask about why this is so bad in general, and don't we support questions, and don't we want people to ask and to try to understand? So he notes, first of all, the Meshach Chachma focuses on one important word, which is an interesting ha'ara, that the language is not that he asked. Right? What does he say? V'hoya ki yomru aleichem b'neichem. He's not asking anything. It's a rhetorical statement. It's a rhetorical question. So that's already the issue, that this is not some honest inquiry, but this is a speech from the Rasha. And also, in Chazal, you find other points of focus, that the Yerushalmi focuses on the fact that he uses the language avoda, which even though we use that positively often, but here it seems to convey this whole thing as a burden. It's just too much for us. It's not anything with any beauty to it. And, of course, the Mechilta, the approach is probably the most famous, which we're familiar with from the Haggadah, that it's Lachem, that he was Motzi Atzom Naklal. He took himself out of the Jewish collective, and that is a crucial problem. And we know, and this is something Rabbi Sachs speaks about in our drash also, that this is a crucial component of what it means to be a Jew, that we have not only Torah mitzvos, but also a Jewish identity. And that's also what we see when it comes to Geirus, when somebody converts to the Jewish people. It's not only Kabbalah Salam mitzvos, but it's also identification with the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, for example, in the speech that we give them to discourage them, so they say, first of all, do you realize you're taking on a huge obligation with these mitzvos and huge liabilities, and you realize the Jews are a persecuted people and you're going to have a hard time. So it's two different things. One is you realize mitzvos are tough, and you realize that the Jews are a collective people that sometimes have challenges. And that's what Soloveitchik had darshaned about also, that the bris of the Jewish people is a dual bris. It is the bris of mitzvos, and it's also the bris of faith. Fate and destiny, he talks about, and that's also throwing your lot in with the Jewish people, and that's crucial, and that's what the Rasha is excluding himself from here, as portrayed by the Haggadah. I believe, if I remember correctly, though it sounds like you were there, that he said, Lachem, Rabbi Sachs here, that the idea is that what the child is saying here, and this is not necessarily focusing on anything negative about him, but maybe on what made him get turned off, maybe that's the point, that he needs to see that this is something that's meaningful to the parents also. It's not just something that he's trying to learn from the parents are trying to teach him, but that they love this and they live this, and that this is something that's a source of their enthusiasm. So he asks him, so tell me, what does all this do for you? And that's where he needs to get a good answer. So the question is, does he get an answer? Shem Shmuel Paul Hirsch's understanding is that this next pasuk is not really an answer, and it's basically a way of ignoring him and saying, listen, you're not going to get any answer you like, but our focus is still, this is what we have to do. And he understands also that the point is, we need practical mitzvos maisios in order to keep us going as a nation. And even though one might object and say, why don't we just have themes and ideas and philosophy, isn't that enough? And we're explaining that no, the only thing that's going to keep us going is practical mitzvahs such as the Korban Pesach, and that's the message that we transmit. Just to close off this aliyah, so we find a couple of points that v'yelchu v'yasu v'nei Yisrael kasher tziva Hashem is meishev Aaron kein asu. So the double language of v'yelchu v'yasu. So here Chazal have a comment, and I think this is a unique kind of phrasing here, that this is really where the idea of schar halicha, schar for the asiya, and also schar for the halicha. It's a discussion in poskim. Is there any advantage to Davka going to a shul that's farther away rather than to a poster shul? So it's a little bit hard to say. But the point seems to be nonetheless that when it makes sense that you're traveling a great distance, that chalicha is also something that you're credited with, and this seems to be the source, essentially, in the Torah for that idea. And Rav Hirsch has a comment here also, kind of closing off his previous comment, that this shows the power of the oral transmission, that here we see at the beginning of the Aliyah, this is all told to the Zakenim. The Zakenim is a minority of the population, and as we noted at the beginning, the mitzvah is for everyone, and yet indeed, that's what happened, that the mitzvah gets passed down to everyone else, and indeed, they all fulfill it, even though it was only transmitted at that stage to a minority of them. So here we have the Shishi, we have such devastating makkah that's presented really as a relatively small part of the Aliyah. I think in the interest of time, we'll just skip from some psukim to other psukim here, but the Aliyah begins, Vahi b'chatzi halayla, that here, halfway through the night, Chatzos, Hashem Hika called Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim, God struck down all the firstborn in Mitzrayim, Bechor Paro, Yoshev Al Kiso, Bechor Hashvi, Asher Be'esabor, Bechor Bechor Behem, all the Bechoros, not just the people, but the animals also. So the Babich Rebbe, in one of the Sikhs, has a discussion that Bechoros is different than all the other Makos. That first of all, there were warnings for the other Makos, but here, it's the only one where there was a specific time that Chatzos is identified. And normally, the Jews didn't have to do anything to protect themselves. And here we have this whole elaborate system that was necessary for the Jews to protect themselves. And indeed, that we just read about, that gives the whole name to the Yontif. So he suggests that there's a fundamental difference, that the other Makos were there to make a point, were there to show God's power. But Makos Bechoros was really an onish. It's not there to show anything anymore, but the ones who were being struck down are not going to live anymore to learn the lesson. So really it was an onish. And once it's an onish, the question could be asked, like we find Chazal saying in a few places, halalu avdo avodah zarah, halalu avdo avodah zarah, that the Jews themselves were not necessarily on such an exalted level either. So why do they deserve to be spared? So the answer is, in the Hanami, they were at risk, and that's why they needed this system, as opposed to all the other Makos, which had a different function. And what saves them is the special, kind of supernatural love that God has for the Jewish people, because of their history of commitment and the like. And therefore, Chatzos, this is something, if you read the Sichos, there's a new version that came out a few years ago, of Babish Rebbe Sichos, that are presented very beautifully. It's really very nicely done, because it's very intimidating to try to read the Babish Rebbe Sichos, because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of them. So they came out a few years ago with a very nice edition, and each, for every parasha, they have three, and they have them in categories. One is supposed to be on a pshat level, one is supposed to be chassidus, and one is supposed to be halacha. So this is from the chassidus one, from this volume. So it's the nature of the approach there. So he says that the point of Chatzos is that Chatzos is when we switch from din to chesed, from din to rachamim, which is why we find, as much as there's a concept it's a little hard for us to relate to, but this affects practical halacha a lot, because slichos we do only after Chatzos, and it's a huge issue about doing it before Chatzos, that has to do with this concept that after Chatzos there's supposed to be a change in the midah of the Ribono Shel at that time. So the point was that it was because it was after Chatzos, that's where the Midas HaRachmim kicks in, and that's how the Jews are spared. And they're spared specifically through the references to these two mitzvos of Milah and Korban Pesach, because Milah represents this kind of supernatural connection, because an eight-day-old baby doesn't have any intellectual connection to God. The point is, even at that age, there is this bond. And Pesach represents, Mesiras Nefesh represents the real danger that they were risking at that time. So the symbolism of Pesach and Milah together is what kind of activates that rachamim, and that's what's unique about how Makos Bechoros unfolds. Okay, so we should skip around a little bit. So you see in Pasuk Lamed Daled, so there is a reference here to Vayisa Amos Mitzeko Terem Yechmatz Sharosim Tzeroros Besimlosim Al Shichmam. So they took their dough, they tried this, what's going to turn into matzah. The Beis Halevi has a famous sikha here, by the way, which maybe we'll have to discuss a different time, where he notes that we have this mentality that we do mitzvahs like matzah because of the historical events. And he explains that really it's the other way around, that the matzah was always a meaningful mitzvah, and it was always God's plan that we would be eating matzahs on Pesach, and history was orchestrated in order to give it a certain context. So however we understand that, again, that's for a future discussion. But here we find that they have their dough that they had to take before it was ready, and they carry it away on their shoulders. No?
Is that idea of Beis Halevi similar like to how the Rebbe's approach to halakha is like a priori and equal concepts?
I assume it's not a total coincidence, but again, it's a little bit of a longer discussion, which maybe we'll have an opportunity to get to in the future, to worry about running out of time here. But this idea they carried it on their shoulders, so the Mechilta asks, what, they didn't have donkeys, they had to carry the dough on their shoulders, and the source here is that this is the idea that they love mitzvos, and therefore, even though they had all the jewelry and all the riches from Mitzrayim, that they let the donkeys carry, but this they carried themselves. And the Torah Tzvimba comments that this is the idea that there's a practice to bake matzahs yourself, that we apply a concept of mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho to the baking of matzahs, that's what is transmitted here, and that's the message. It's just interesting to note, in the spirit of some random haros quickly, that if you go ahead to Pasuk Mem, there's a Moshe of Bnei Yisrael, Asher Yoshvu Mitzrayim, Shloshim Shana Ve'arba Me'oshana. So this traveling of the Jewish people who lived in Egypt for 430 years. So the Gemara in Megillah talks about the Septuagint. You're familiar with the story about how the 70 rabbis were brought into a room, were brought into separate rooms, and were told to translate the Torah into Greek. And through Hashgacha, they all changed the same things, that there were certain words that they changed because they were worried they would create misunderstandings. And this was one of them, the Gemara says, that they added here that Yoshvu Mitzrayim was Shara Ratzos, and also other places, because it's not exactly actually 430 years in Mitzrayim that was counted from earlier. So they were worried that this may lead to misunderstandings and that the question might come up, oh, the Torah is wrong. So therefore they expanded the phrase to be more literally correct than symbolically correct. Okay, so again, to skip around a little bit more, for the Pasuk Mem Beis, we find Leil Shimurim. That's a famous phrase, Leil Shimurim, Hu LaHashem, Lo Tziyam Eretz Mitzrayim, Hu HaLayil HaZel HaShem, Shimurim, L'chol B'nei Yisrael, U'dorosom. So this is a night of watchfulness, right? What does Shimurim mean? So the truth is, Machlokis in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, what Leil Shimurim means, that according to one opinion, according to Yeshua, it means a day that was preserved, that from the Sheish Mei Bereishis, it was known that this was going to be the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the more well-known interpretation is Rabbi Elazar, that it's a time when the Jews are protected from Mazikin. And that's the way we normally relate to it, and that's why Pesach night, there are certain practices that are supposed to represent that we feel protected, and we feel safe, we open the door, and the like. And Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch has a comment here just grammatically, working off this idea that it means protection, that shimurim is a strange way of saying, how would you grammatically say a night that is protected? Shimurim, what kind of format is that? What kind of grammar is that? So he says it's both PL and plural, and that the message is this is meant to represent intense and abundant, not just protection, but intense protection and abundant production. There's also a very interesting comment of Rosh Hashanah Rafael Hirsch, if you want to take a look, in Pasuk Mem Dalet. So there's a reference to V'chol Eved Ish Miknas Kasev, U'malto So Az Yochol Ba. But also, when you're talking about the Mila, the Karban Pesach, you also have to make sure that all your Avadim have Mila. So Hirsch has a comment here, really, Avadim? They're going to have slaves? That here the Jews are just freed from slavery themselves, and now they're talking about how they're going to have slaves? Does that sound like a good idea? So he has a whole discussion there, which is very interesting and very important to keep in mind, about how, no, the point is not that the Jews are going to look to enslave others, but it's a part of a broader discussion of where exactly the concept of slavery fits into the Torah. So he emphasizes there that a Jew doesn't have the ability to transform anyone into a slave. That it's only that when the concept of slaves exists, so then the idea of the Jews to try to give a slave a humane life and a better treatment, and that's what the reference would be, or theoretically one could choose to sell himself into slavery, but the idea of forcing anyone into slavery, that's not a possible concept here, and the context is only one when there is pre-existing slavery, and the chiddush is that one should try to impose both humanity and proper treatment and morality into the situation. And obviously, this is a much longer discussion, but it's just worth noting that on this pasuk specifically, Rav Hirsch has a little bit of a discussion about that. Hi.
Is that also true for Rabbi Shmuel?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, specifically.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Okay, so just mention one more idea that, and then we'll daven mincha. But perhaps the most famous comment in the Sefer Achinuch, I feel like we mentioned it recently, but Pasuk Mem Vav is the Isser of Atzim Lo Sish Berubo. When you're eating the Karban Pesach, you have to make sure not to break any of the bones. So it's interesting, this is kind of a roundabout mitzvah, this Atzim Lo Sish Berubo. Why is there such a kapeda that we shouldn't break any of the bones? So there's a kind of a circular theme here. If you look at Rav Hirsch's comments again, so you'll see a lot of different imagery in this pasuk of what exactly is the message of this particular din. But the way it's understood through Chazal, it's a little bit of a roundabout idea, is that we want to make sure that you will eat the Karban Pesach in a fashion like a king, in a fashion where you are not hurried and you're not just stuffing it down. So therefore, you have to be careful the way you eat it, so that if you're careful not to break a bone, so then you're going to eat slowly and you're going to eat benachas, and that's the whole theme that we're going for. So it's interesting that really the focus is that the eating should be benachas, so you eat benachas so as you don't break a bone, but really it's circular. The point of saying don't break bones is so that you should eat it in a way that is king-like. But here the Sefer Achinuch has his perhaps most quoted line where he says that this is just an example of how the Torah gives us practical mitzvos in order to inculcate a certain mentality. And that's essentially what all the mitzvot maisus are about. And he has that line there that after acharei hapulos nimshachos halavavos, that the heart and the mind and the attitudes, they follow what you do practically. And this is really one of the major yusodos of Judaism, like we just alluded to before, with that response to the Rasha, that practical mitzvot are a crucial component of how we maintain our values, how we maintain our identity, and that it's interesting why the Sefer Achinuch picked this mitzvah especially to make this whole speech, but this is what he focuses on, and again, it's a theme that's really relevant to all the mitzvahs of the Torah, so just that's an important Maror Makom as well. A lot more to say about this, but a little bit of a constricted schedule this week. Again, thank you all for putting up with that. And God willing.